that was the other thing I was going to just briefly say about the school curriculum that might be just worth mentioning here is about what some people might call the knowledge turn, which I think is this idea of powerful knowledge and how that idea of powerful knowledge has been interpreted in some contexts as being a potentially reductive idea, which kind of just, I don't think that's necessarily the intention. It's certainly not the intention of Michael Young, but I think in some interpretations of the powerful knowledge of agenda, we've neglected some of the historical concepts that are at the heart of the national curriculum, like interpretations, like historical significance, that really open up some of the really fruitful ways in which actually young people can engage with some of the controversies that we think are productive when you are studying the British Empire.
Well, I think that's so important. I think it's massively important. And I think I don't want to romanticize it and say that, oh, there's a democratization of knowledge happening. There's still so much going on and so much politics in all of this and very much a hierarchy. But I think, you know, we are seeing a turn taking place. And I think there's just so many layers to this. Again, I mean, a younger generation are coming through with way more information at their fingertips, readily available through the internet and social media and their devices, you know, as long as they're of a family that can afford to get them these things. And they're questioning a lot more than ever before, you know, and especially where you come from a minority ethnic background, do you have choices about how you engage with your culture and heritage? You don't have to be interested in your ancestors or your historic identity, but we are, I think, I mean, I have no, I felt it, but, and then what you just said about Hannah's story is very, very moving. And I can resonate with that. People are increasingly harnessing some of this stuff for their own strength, you know, and their own sense of purpose and identity within a very rapidly changing Britain. And that's fraught with tension for those that have a more conservative vision of what this country is about, where we come up in this issue about what the British nation should stand for. And since Brexit, of course, we're seeing internal divisions about which way Scotland's going to go, what's going to happen with Northern Ireland. Even Wales might think about doing a referendum. So within the four nations, you're seeing that tension. But then within the minority ethnic communities, be it from former Commonwealth, you know, sort of Commonwealth migration generations or even European migrants in this country that are now thinking about what to do post-Brexit, there is a real melting pot of issues about what does it mean to be British and how do you deal with history in the midst of all of that? And where it comes to this knowledge turn, is that people, when they don't see this, young people, when they don't see this reflected in their school curricula or their university curricula, when they have got fragments of knowledge, that what I am positive about is that there is a growing conversation to bring this in. And so Michael really nicely did put, you know, some examples forward about how academics have done some really great work to work with schools and that kind of stuff. But academics themselves are being forced to respond in university spaces by the undergraduates and the postgraduates that are turning up and saying, I want to know about this. So on all fronts, we're having this conversation. And when we were talking earlier about cultural history, well, again, the very fact that cultural history exists as such a big and important transformative field right now is because we started to question the idea that culture as handed down to us or traditions as handed down to us are not something that are fixed. Are not something that are inherently stable, but that have evolved, that can be questioned, and that have historical contingency embedded at the heart of them. So within this kind of melting point of questioning and challenge and bringing to the fore new kinds of knowledge, particularly, I think, actually, I'm seeing it in my new role now as a community history fellow at Oxford, that we're not just privileging or foregrounding academic knowledge only, but we're willing much more to engage with and bring out and co-create with community knowledge from local historians, people that haven't done a degree, that may not have done any kind of formal academic study, but nevertheless have a deep well of knowledge within them from within their community. There's got to be a breakdown, you know, of these knowledge hierarchies. And when you think about, again, where does that come from, that sense of knowledge hierarchy, particularly when relating to the history discipline? Well, actually, there is an imperial history in there, you know? I mean, Priya Satya's recent book, Time's Monster, shows that so beautifully and so powerfully. It's worth spending the time on that book, I must admit. And she shows how the very discipline of history and who writes history, who publishes history, what goes into that history, went hand in hand with the building and the justifying of a British empire. So we're in the process, essentially, of unravelling all of this. And what's quite incredible, and I think we need to give more credit to, is how our young kids are massively at the forefront of all of this, or in the melting pot of it. And actually, it's a lot for them to go through. So for teachers and for students on the front line, especially in a climate where politicians and public figures are stoking a really volatile environment, we really need to take care of this new generation of educationists and children and students that are now trying to learn and to think or rethink everything in this environment, I think.